Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Todd Schnick. Good morning, Todd.
Morning, Stone. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I haven't seen you in a while. You've been a busy guy.
It's been a while since we've been. You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing well. We had a big birthday, prom, Mother's Day weekend at the Payton house, and then this morning we got E. Smith Heating and Air out putting in a new air conditioner.
Oh, that sounds scintillating.
How about you? Where you been, man?
Oh, I've been all over the place. Been in Florida for the last week doing a couple of trade show events, so that was a lot of fun. So
you've done more interviews like in the last couple of days on the road doing a remote than we do in here.
You know, I had forgotten just how brutal and tiring doing trade show radio for 24 hours a day is. Did a lot of interviews. A lot of fun, though. I got 12 interviews this week on various shows and podcasts. It's going to be a crazy.
We got to give Todd Youngblood a shout out. Did he help you do any of these interviews?
Oh yeah, no, it was Dreamland. Did the trade show radio? Had a lot of fun and we had a good time.
Cool. Well, we got a studio full this morning.
We do. Our first guest on High Velocity Radio today is the founder of Henderson Shapiro Peck, a marketing firm. Welcome to the show, Debbie Shapiro.
Thank you.
Well, we've had you on the calendar now for, I think, like 2.5-3 years, so it's good that we finally got you here. It's a pleasure to finally meet you. Before we get into a conversation, why don't you just spend a few minutes and tell us a little bit about your background and what Henderson Shapiro Peck's out there doing for folks.
Well, I am originally from Tennessee, but have been loving Georgia for about 18 years and founded the company about 16 years ago, actually, and we're a marketing and business support company. We focus a lot on branding and advertising, a lot of B2B space, and are having a big time. We have a staff of about 23 and love our clients, and they love us, and we love what we do, and everyone's happy.
Well, a quick shout out to Erin. She's the one that connected you and me to get you on this show, so thank you, Erin.
Erin's awesome, our social media queen.
So walk us through what a typical engagement with a client looks like for Henderson Shapiro Peck. So someone comes to you or you reach out to them and they obviously need some help. How does that process begin? How does it start?
Well, typically, I'll just even step back a second and say that the lion's share of our business is referrals from other clients and or business associates. So that's nice. And they will usually come to us with one initiative that they need help on, and one thing kind of leads to another, so to speak. In contrast, we have been fortunate enough to secure some contracts with some major clients, and we have specific programs that we'll focus on for some of our larger clients, and then some of the medium-sized clients, it's just advertising as usual, B2B advertising in, trade journals, for example, on a monthly basis with great creative. And then we do a lot of branding for clients. So a client will come to us and say that they, their business is coming to fruition, they're in the process of starting up, and they need a brand. And so we take them through a very laborious but awesome exercise, try to understand their company, the personality of their company, what they're trying to accomplish, so that they can have that very coveted visual distinction that we all call a logo. And then it just kind of moves forward from there and usually branches off into other forms of advertising at that point once the business is launched.
So what kind of mistakes do firms like this typically make before they engage someone like you, or if they make the decision not to engage someone with your expertise and counsel, what kind of mistakes do you find these firms making?
Well, I think in the shortest answer is probably strategically not really thinking through what it is they're trying to do. In a lot of situations, I think clients become enamored with a short-term issue that they need to solve, and inevitably we will solve their marketing problem, but we really didn't have a chance to sit back with them and look at, well, what does the next phase look like, or what does the next rollout look like, or what is the next product that you're going to launch and or service, going to look like. And so I'm just going to say no strategic planning.
So tell us a little bit about your firm itself. You said you had 20 plus. So that's mm-hmm. a big operation. It's probably difficult to keep all those cats herded. Walk us through, do you have any kind of unique culture? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think we have an amazing culture. I hope that if my staff is listening, that they would agree. Very, very family-friendly environment. Actually, years ago, we were voted by Working Mother Magazine as one of the top 50 small businesses in the country to work for.
So that was cool.
Yeah, that was a huge honor, and I think it said a lot about what Jill and I, Jill Peck, my partner, and I have created, and the behavior and the philosophy that we're trying to emulate, you know, throughout the country. I mean, throughout the company, throughout the country. That would be awesome if we
could
have.
That's the next step.
Yeah, exactly. That must be like having a little Freudian thing going on. But anyway, no turnover, really, which is awesome. Our team members tend to stay with us for a very long time, and we're very, very flexible about time off with kids and recitals and baseball and things like that. So,
as long as the work's getting done, right?
Exactly.
Well, can you walk us through an example of a project, and either take one that you've worked through recently or in the middle of, or if you want to take a Business Radio X, or in how does that work on it? If we were working together, what would we do first?
Well, first I would say, why did I not see Atlanta Business Radio X on your door when I came here? I mean, seriously, at the end of the day, I mean, branding is a lot. It's not just about the visual depiction of a logo. So perhaps that's where I'd start, Mr. Stone. I don't know, but I would want to really step back and have you go through that branding process, really just to have a better understanding of what you are, who you are, what the objectives and things like that of your firm, company, initiative. Not even sure what the right word is.
Well, you mentioned,
but it's awesome. I guess podcast is probably the best word. Yeah. We talked about that earlier, Mr.
Yeah.
Todd.
Well, you mentioned that branding isn't always a visual depiction.
Correct.
It is more than a logo. Obviously, that's an important element of it. When a client comes to me, I do a lot of branding work myself. And they say, well, I need a new brand. And what they're really telling me is I want a new logo. I said, well, brand is so much more than that.
Exactly.
So I suspect that's common throughout the realm that organizations come and say, I want to rebrand, when it's really the customer experience makes up that brand, right? Walk us through some of that.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. And when we sit with clients and try to talk to them about branding, when we bring things up to them, how you answer the phone is indicative of your brand. How your employees, quote unquote, behave, and that could be a whole nother radio show, is indicative of your brand. Obviously, your marketing materials, your collaterals, your logo, and that sort of thing. But the types of clients that you work with, trade shows and seminars and work outside of the company, all needs to be part of that brand so that you can maintain, you know, the continuity of what you're trying to do. And a lot of clients, particularly the small to medium-sized businesses that we work with, it's a problem because you're exactly right. They come to us and they want a brand, quote-unquote, but they really just need something visual to put on the next collateral of the day to go out the door.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do have a funny branding story.
Tell us.
Let's hear it.
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so long story short, friends are out of town, friends from Atlanta. They are at Seaside. They're sitting around the pool over the spring break, and they're just kind of sitting around, and they overhear one teenage kid say, "Does anybody know Sam Shapiro?" That's my son, by the way. And the other kid's like, "No, I think I've heard the name." And then from far behind the chair, this other teenage kid that had three huge drinks in his hand said, "Sam Shapiro, he's the gluten-free kid." And then everybody started screaming, "Oh, yeah, I know Sam." So it's crazy, but that is a good branding story because that's who he had become. He's not necessarily doing that gluten-free diet anymore, which that's the second radio show we can talk about at this point, but whatever. So, yeah.
So I want to hear a little bit about your experience in incorporating technology and social media in all these engagements, because I got to believe many of those clients are like me. They've heard just enough about this stuff to be dangerous, but don't have a clue about how to tap into them and may run the risk of misusing them.
Well, we need to bring Aaron here, Todd, to be on that show to do that.
Yeah, I think
but
you're right.
It's just funny. Years ago, the piece of the web, I'll just go backwards a few steps, and potential clients would call and ask if we could do their web, quote unquote. Can you build us a website?
Right.
And then we realized that they really just wanted it designed. They already had a website. They just wanted that graphic look. So over time, we began to build our skills and create strategic alliances with some programmers and, you know, things like that, and really kind of got that part down and had our first at least 80 to 100 page website that we did for a client. So that was a huge success.
Wow.
So then over time, you know, with the social media and, you know, it came to fruition and all the, you know, analytics and that sort of thing. And what we've done as a business is we have aligned ourselves as we continue to learn and grow in that space with some strategic partners that are doing that with us at the very highest level. And we have team members like an Aaron who are, you know, just way on top of that cutting edge and have helped integrate that into, you know, some of our plans. What we struggle with a little bit is on the B2B side, there's a different strategy, there's a different methodology, and there's a kind of different set of rules versus a consumer, a B2C client. And so we're working through that right now, and you have to kind of be careful, because if you have a consumer product, that's kind of path A. But when it's on the B2B side, particularly with rolling new products out and a lot of confidential information and just taking into account all the NDAs that everybody signed, I believe it's a great medium. I just tell our team that we need to exercise caution as we move forward in that space sometimes, depending on who the client is.
I think you've published a couple of books, and I think, if I heard you correctly, that you're in the process of working on another one. Tell us about some of those projects.
Well, I'm not going to tell you about the one that Jill and I are working on, because you're going to invite us back for a show.
Okay.
And we'll tell you all about that one. But the first book, and really that's the only one, well, our company has published some books for some other clients. In fact, one of the guests in the room knows Monique Hahnemann, and she wrote an amazing book called The High Road Has Less Traffic.
We've had Monique on the show before.
Yes,
talking
okay.
About that book.
So, yeah, so we designed that book, paginated that book, and helped her through some of the strategies in marketing that book. It's an amazing read for the right market. Our company, Henderson Shapiro Peck, published a book called The Common Thread. And this was years ago when the Peachtree Road Race was commemorating the 35th running of the Peachtree Road Race. And that was more of a coffee table kind of book that promoted and highlighted all the graphics of the T-shirt. And it was fun. It was a huge undertaking. And it was before you could go to a print-on-demand type of place and do the book. So we had to go through the traditional printing, strategy. And it was expensive. It was overwhelming. But it was a great project. Now, do I still have books left over that I could take the book covers and wallpaper a room? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. So, but the Atlanta Track Club was amazing to work with, and they released a lot of, you know, photos and gave us a lot of rights and things like that. So it was fun.
You think they're going to make bigger Kindles so we could have coffee table Kindle books?
I think so.
I think
probably.
That's where it's probably going to go.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
So where can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more about your work and have a substantive conversation about all things from branding to meeting their market more effectively?
Well, they could go to our website, hendersonshapiropeck.com, and just contact us that way. Or, I mean, probably silly these days to give a phone number, but I guess I will if anybody wants to jot it down, 678-352-7100.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. And all kidding aside, we'd love to have you come back.
With our book.
And talk about your book.
We will.
And I know Todd will have all kinds of questions about that. So you'd be up for that then, Todd? You'll
absolutely.
Come back and you'll ask
absolutely.
All right.
And we'll do some branding case studies. I just need to get some releases signed first, but that will be really
and
fun.
We'll put a sign on the door or whatever you tell us to do.
Oh, that's a third meeting.
Yeah. Hey, can you hang out with us for a little while? Or you're going to run. You got to go to Cumming or something,
I've got to go to Cumming.
All right. We'll have you back. We'll have you back soon.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Debbie. Thanks. All right. Well, our next guests on the High Velocity Radio Show are both long-term care specialists. Stone, I have no idea what that really means, so I'm looking forward to learning. Welcome, Diana Renton and Brenda Joyner.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
So why don't we, one at a time, I'll start with you, Diana. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into this line of work.
My background was in health, and I have a checkered past because I held various positions and product marketing and marketing manager. I got an MBA along the way. And I most recently retired, before I started this particular field from a big pharmaceutical company. And it was very tough near the end of it because it's difficult when you have an expensive branded drug and a $4 Walmart that, you know, it makes sense for a lot of people to try that first. So I kind of felt like, ugh. So I decided, to, you know, time to leave this business and find something else. And I look back through my life, and I've had a couple long-term care events in my family. And I thought, you know, that would be something to do, and I would feel like I live a purposeful life. And so that's how I got into this.
That's great. Brenda, tell us your story a little bit about your background.
Well, I've always been in insurance as long as I've worked. And long-term care became something that was very personal to me. And I introducing myself sometimes, I will tell people when they say, well, what do you do? And I will say, well, I help people figure out the answer to the question, well, what are we going to do about Mama? Because that, at the end of the day, is what Diana and I both do. We help people plan for the situation that happens to 70% of us. And we were talking with Debbie even earlier. It's something that happens to most people, and to have a plan in place before it happens. So,
well, define what long-term care specialist is, and why is it suddenly on the minds of a lot of people? I mean, I suspect, other than the fact that baby boomers are now getting into the retirement years and all that, it's probably a great time to be in this line of work, I suspect.
Yeah, when you look at just the life events that happen to people, people are planners for the most part, and they plan for what's going to happen. 70% of people who have an unimaginable event in their life, 70% of people will leave the world slowly. 30% will leave the world quickly. So it's that 70% of people. When it happens, when the unthinkable happens and your health changes, your options are your family can take care of you. You can spend your money until your money's gone, and then you might be eligible for Medicaid, or you can insure the risk like you do your car, your home, and other types of insurance. So from our perspective, it really doesn't matter if you choose to insure it, but it does matter that you have a plan. So if it's going to be your family, you need to have had the discussion with which child, not which child will do it, but which child can do it, which is a huge difference.
Yeah, that's my brother. That would be the answer to that. Yeah. Well, it's all on you, Russ.
Yeah, I knew that without asking. Mm-hmm.
So that's what Diana and I help people figure that out.
All right, so I have health care coverage. That's not long-term care coverage. What exactly is long-term care insurance, and what does it cover? Walk us through that. And if you don't mind, just for the benefit of the audience's education, what are some of those events, those unimaginable events that occur that people that would need this?
Health insurance does not cover long-term care. In its entirety, you might have health insurance that covers 30, 60, 90 days in a nursing home. Mm-hmm. This is not about being in a nursing home. This is not about being old, although you might think so. If you think about young people driving, what do they do on the weekend? They drive down to Atlanta, and people in the cars next to them are texting. So you have an event where someone's in a terrible car accident, and you don't die. It's the 70%. So it's not covered by health insurance. Most people, when something happens, they want to stay in their home so that they can be in their own environment. So this is about allowing people choice and keeping you from being overwhelmed overnight. So it's just having a plan in place.
So what are some of the financial pundit personalities, some of the people that may not have as much of a profile as, say, a Todd Schnick, but we've heard of them, the Dave Ramseys, the Susie Ormans. What do they say about this? Do they say there's a magic window when you should start investing in long-term care insurance? Are they endorsing you guys, or?
You know, you'll hear different thoughts on that. Sometimes you'll hear people say, "Well, you should be 60." Sometimes you'll hear people say, "Well, you should have your children out of college." My thought is, you should look at this when you still are healthy enough to do it. because you do have to have pretty good health in order to insure it if that's your choice. So, yes, they are saying that you should, if you have assets to protect, if you don't want to be a burden to your children, then insurance might be the best solution.
Diana, is this like life insurance? I mean, I've been paying into a life insurance policy for a long, long time. Is this something that a young man like me or an old coot like Stone could? I mean, is there a wrong time to start doing this? And walk us through, if you guys can, what the financial investment is on this. And this probably varies on the circumstances, but walk us through some of those scenarios.
The big difference between this and life insurance is that life insurance, if you have term life insurance, you buy a static amount of life insurance. And so if you buy it when you're young, like you, and you have it for 30 years, every 15 years, however much you have in that life insurance policy is going to be half of that, you know, in terms of what you can spend. And then in another 15 years, it's going to be half of that. So people think, oh, I have $100,000, but in 30 years, in matter of, you know, spendability, they're going to have $25,000.
Ouch.
Wow.
Where a long-term care policy has inflation protection on it. And so there's two things that I want to say about that. The first is that pool of money grows. It compounds. So it's like I come to your house with a pool of money, a bucket of money. We put it in the cupboard. And 30 years later, when you take it out, it's doubled and doubled again. So it's designed to keep up with inflation. So that's, you know, you're going forward. And there's laws in Georgia that protect our assets by having that pool of money from an insurance company. It's called the Georgia Partnership Law. And it gives us dollar-for-dollar asset protection against our assets so that you can, in fact, go on Medicaid and still retain a lot of assets.
So it's like an investment almost.
It's insurance.
Okay.
It truly is insurance. What it does is it helps you protect your assets. Mm-hmm.
Are there limits on what you can spend that money on? There must be some rules about what you can spend that money on, right? Just like there would be with an educational kind of plan thing.
Well, you have to spend it on taking care of yourself.
Right.
And you can spend it at home or in assisted living or in a nursing home or an adult daycare.
Oh, some pretty broad strokes then. Okay.
That's right. And you can spend it, you know, you can have it be reimbursed. Some policies will give you a certain percent in cash, which, you know, can be advantageous because you don't have to go through claims. It's just, boom, here's the money to take care of yourself every month. So, that you know, it's very flexible on how you use these policies.
But if I were to start now, my parents are late 60s, early mm-hmm. 70s. If I were going to buy it for their benefit, that's going to cost me a pretty penny, right? It's a very different scenario than me buying it on me.
Yes, it is. And that's why buying it early.
Right.
The average age of my clients is right around 50. And it's what happens is people have learned through sticker shock, like you will. If your parents need to go into a nursing home, that runs $60,000
to $70,000
in year? Atlanta per year.
Per year.
Oh my
and
God.
That can decimate even the most robust retirement. And so a lot of clients your age come because they're like, well, really, I want to leave a legacy to my children. I want to protect my assets so I can enjoy my retirement. So I am going to create the separate pool of money that's going to keep up with inflation rather than having to, you know, dip into my savings for something as expensive as a long-term care event.
Yeah.
So what happens is the reason to buy it when you're in the early 50s would be two things. First of all, you're probably more insurable when you're that age because as you age, life happens and, you know, the underwriters are not, it's really sad how often it happens in the early to mid 50s where people start to be uninsurable forever. Mm. So it's age banded. This isn't the type of insurance that goes up in price every year, but it goes up with what chronologically you are. So if you were to wait instead of buy it in your early 50s to when your parents are older, what happens is they're going to pay a higher premium because of their age, and they're going to have to buy more insurance because the cost of insurance, the cost of being cared for, rather, is going up. So they're going to have to buy a bigger pool of money than you would at 50, because remember that inflation protection. Right. So over the life of the policy, it's actually more cost effective to buy it earlier, even though you're going to keep it for a long time.
So obviously, if you're 50 and healthy, you can get it, and it's probably less expensive. But can you get it if you're 70 and you have health problems? I mean, can you even get a long-term care policy if you're in that situation?
It depends on what's wrong with you. Mm. If you've ever been to the doctor, and this is what guys do a lot of times, the first time you forget where your car keys are, you run to the doctor and you say, I'm losing my mind. Yeah. And he writes it in his records. That's very difficult at that point to get a long-term care policy, regardless
wow.
of how
so you can
you
be
are.
Rejected.
How
if
about
you
that
have...
for a tip?
Wow. Okay. So there's the.
Don't even try to be funny and say something like that at the doctor.
There's
right?
the money shot in this episode. Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm screwed. I said some zany stuff to my doctor. Good Lord. Okay. So you could be rejected for this. What are your options if you are?
You go back to those four options. If you do not have insurance, then your family takes care of you. Or you spend your money, all your assets, until your money's gone, and then you might be eligible for Medicaid. And I say might because there are some income requirements
sure.
along those lines.
So do people knock down your door wanting to talk about this? I mean, or are you out there having to hump it to market? What's the business side of this thing like for you?
As the baby boomers are aging in, and we are experiencing what this means with our parents, it is becoming much more of a viable option. However, it's really hard for people to realize and to put themselves into that thought process that this can happen to me. People who think that this will happen to them or could happen to them will always insure it because it's ugly, it's nasty. People who don't think that it can happen to them, maybe not. They'll take their chances.
The gamblers are not working with good odds. If you gamble and don't get this, because the odds of, well, let me ask you a question. Does anybody have an idea of what the percentage of folks in a nursing home is between the ages of 18 and 64?
I have zero idea.
It's 40%.
No kidding.
Oh, my God.
And so when you get to the age of 65, 70% of us are going to have an event. The odds are 1 in 3 for a male and 1 in 2 for a female. So the odds of having a long-term care event are much higher than any other risk we insure against. It's higher than having a car accident and replacing that car. It's higher than having a fire in our home. It's higher than having a health event. So we're going to, this is the highest risk that we can possibly insure against.
What can we do? I'm not talking about Stone and I, although we want to help, but what can be done to help? I'll be honest with you. I work hard to fund my health insurance. I work hard to fund an IRA for my retirement. I have no doubt that I'm going to glom onto my folks as best I can. I have my back, but I had never in a million years thought about long-term care insurance. I mean, is this something that's relatively new to the market? I mean, I just don't feel like I've ever really heard about this. What can we do to educate the marketplace about this?
I think the government is doing some educational programs. Diana mentioned the partnership law, which was passed, and the government is also the CLASS Act, which small businesses will be hearing about, and that isn't. Those are both efforts on the part of our government to let people know that number one, the government doesn't have money to take care of us as we age, and we need to do something to be proactive ourselves. So they're doing some educational things. It's very, very slow. What we're seeing is, again, as the baby boomers are aging in and we're taking care of our parents. And Mother's Day was a great day for people to stop for a moment and kind of think through that. And Father's Day is coming up. This is about families, and it is a ripple effect. So when it happens, and it happens overnight, you get a phone call, your mother can't remember how to get home.
Changes your life.
It changes the whole family's life. And then it becomes ugly, and then it's too late, because then you can't do it.
Am I insuring against or going to get a specific dollar benefit, or once I've got this policy, then I've got it kind of handled between a couple of ditches?
When you design the policy, hopefully you're working with somebody who specializes in long-term care insurance.
You know anybody like that? If you could refer somebody.
I know a couple of folks who do specialize.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
You actually design a policy that puts you where you want to be in relationship to the cost of care.
Mm-hmm.
So you may want to insure the whole thing. You may want to insure part of it.
Uh-huh.
I insured most of it for my husband and myself when I was 50. I insured it for my mother when she was 75. On Mother's Day, I bought her a long-term care policy, never dreaming that she would get Alzheimer's. So I didn't buy her a big enough policy. I figure that we're going to end up being out of pocket about $750,000 for her. So you purchase it to the best you can to put you in a certain position, and then you put inflation protection on it so you stay in that same position. But you really need to understand what it is you're doing so that when you go to use it, it is what you thought it was. And that's why a specialist is helpful.
Well, we're about out of time, and obviously people can contact you, the two of you, to get help on this. Can you call your regular health provider? And for instance, I use Blue Cross. Can I call? Is there a long-term care division of Blue Cross that I could call? I mean, does that apply to all major carriers, or is it?
It's a special kind of insurance. Blue Cross does not offer long-term care insurance.
They do not at all. Interesting.
So there are probably 30 insurers. And there are three that are major players in the market. Diane and I happen to work with about seven of the top insurers. So you really have to be careful.
So it's really not a situation where I could go to call Blue Cross, hit dial 4, and get to the long-term care division. You probably really do need a specialist to help you walk you through, because mm-hmm. every family situation is different.
If you want to be sure that you're getting something that's going to be there when you need it and understand how it works and your family's protected, yeah, I would recommend a specialist.
Well, I tell you what, I'm not waiting until I'm 50. I'm going to do this when I'm 40. When I turn 40, I want you to give me a call.
We need to do this before Diana and I leave.
Clearly, Stone's already losing something upstairs, so they've obviously picked up the signals.
This is important information. I mean, this is really, I don't think it's just us. I think a lot of folks don't know this.
That's what I'm saying.
We got to get the word out about that.
I agree.
Yeah, great interview. I hope you know, it would be fun. You guys ought to come back. Maybe with a client that was really glad they did it, that could be an interesting.
That would be a cool story to tell.
Yeah. We can do that. We have some folks here in right in this vicinity that would be delighted to come over.
That would be a great show and really and meaningful, I think. Can you guys hang out with us for a little while we talk to our next guest?
Wait, before we do that, share with the audience how they can get in touch with you guys. Your phone numbers, emails, all that.
Okay. My name is Diana Renton, and my email is Renton Renton.DIANA. And my number is 770-485-7614.
And Brenda Joyner, and my email is Brenda Joyner, Joiner, at T as in Tom, D as in dog, S as in Sam.net. And you can reach me at 770-841-9134.
Ladies, it was a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time and helping educate the market about this. Appreciate that. Stone, we got some work to do.
We do, don't we?
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the president and founder of Right to Market, a PR marketing shop. Welcome to the show, Lisa Calhoun.
Thanks a lot, Todd and Stone. It's great to be here.
Well, it's a joy to finally meet you. We've had some pleasure working with some of your colleagues on getting some guests on this show, so we're grateful to you guys and look forward to continuing that relationship. So appreciate that. Before we get underway with just chatting, tell the audience a little bit about you, your background, and what you're out there doing for people.
Sure. Well, my background is I used to really just write for a living, and I ran some trade journals. Back in my 20s, I worked as a director of marketing. And I have to say I was really unhappy with the way I saw the way the marketing world and the public relations world treated high-growth businesses. I thought that they took a lot of their money and didn't give them a lot of ROI. And I decided, you know what, if this is such a problem, why can't you do something to change it? So I launched Right to Market in 2003, focused very much on results-oriented writing at the time. Got involved in content development, social media, SEO, and then realized where my clients were really getting the most value was when that content was turned into connections, so through publicity. So Right to Market, over the last few years, has morphed into a full-service B2B public relations firm. We create recognizable industry leadership, and we've developed a really tight methodology to do that time after time for great companies.
Well, I always thought you guys were a PR shop, but I never understood the right, W-R-I-T-E, to market. Now I know why your company's called that.
You know, we're changing our name to Valor PR in the next month, so you'll see some of that communication happen. No, absolutely, because we work with industry leaders, and so we've realized that although we know that content is kind of our killer app, the fact is, writing is not something that really attracts the clients the way we need to connect with them. So to get into that idea of industry leadership, working with heroes, creating stars, we are changing our name.
You know what might be fun? Maybe you guys are already on top of this and going to do it, is to document your own struggle with your name change. Almost like in the style that they shoot that comedy, The Office. And come in there and listen to people say, oh, we're changing our name, and they forget to mention it. And that might be fun to document that. Like, you follow them around with a flip camera or something.
That would be interesting.
Guys, I love that idea because it is a total struggle. And we have an in-house video production team, so might as well. And then that'll just help us get the word out because it'll be pretty funny. It's been quite an experience.
Well, that's a cool story to tell others down the road because you're going to have clients down the road that'll have that. That'll be trying to do something similar. You can say, well, I'll tell you what. Watch our story.
Hey, we have clients now and we tell them, you need to change your name. Look, we know. We understand this pain, but there's, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, we work with a company, Office Arrow, and they're a fantastic company. They provide a lot of value for businesses. There where busy people go to get things done for products and services. But the office part is great. The Arrow part, even though it, yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of, so anyway, yeah, names are hard.
So, PR work. I mean, helping a lot of people still think PR work is, all right, I want to get you placed in the Atlanta Business Chronicle, mentioned in some article, but it's really more than that. And I'm thrilled to hear, because what I think you're really talking about is helping your clients excel at content marketing, right?
Well, it's bigger than that. You're totally on the right track. But the fact is, companies need to connect with their target audience. So, you know, getting mentioned in your local business journal, your American Cities Journal, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think where a lot of high growth, high velocity companies fail is failing to realize the power of consistency in their messaging. So you may be on the front cover of that local paper, but because of the way people read everything, including Facebook or even Twitter, almost all media today is a drive-by platform. So the consistency of how regularly you are in front of your target audience is what makes your messaging campaign successful or not. So, I mean, that's why we have a methodology. And if you've got a second, I mean, I'll let you know a little bit about that.
Tell us all about it.
I think that people can totally, you know, steal this and use it for yourself. It's called the AAA Industry Leadership. And we do awards, access, and awareness. We find that these things mutually reinforce each other and create higher ROI for companies that use them. So whatever the awards are in your industry, go get those. Make that list and start it now. Access, that's getting in front of conferences, speaking engagements, doing seminars. Access directly to your target audience. Then awareness, that's social media, Facebook, magazines, radio shows like this one. But when companies pursue all three at once with a special particular message campaigned, they really start to feel, they feel the wind of that in their sales efforts.
So how do you shop for a PR relationship? Because I know if we were going out right now and we said, okay, we're going to engage a PR, I wouldn't even know what questions to ask, and I wouldn't know what pitfalls to look for. What advice do you have on that front?
Stone, I pity the poor fool that has to look for PR today. I do, because the fact is it's completely changed so much in the last 5 years on two fronts. One, media has changed. 3 in 5 media jobs are gone in the last 5 years. That has created such havoc. We could do a lot on that, just discussing that. But that's one side. Then on the other side, what people, the tools that businesses have to use with social media and Twitter and things like that and radio shows like this one have completely changed the deck of cards. So when you go to market for PR, a lot of the established firms, really strong ones, played well 4 years ago and are struggling today, but they have this great book of business. You can't quite tell what's going on. I mean, is that a good company to work with or not? I mean, sometimes yes and sometimes no. And I hear, you know, we get a lot of that fall off. Then you have these startup PR firms that are really full of energy, and but they have no methodology or consistency. They've got a lot of energy and they do understand the new media, but they don't have the long relationships. So it's a volatile business right now. And all I will say is if you're looking for PR, talk to current clients of the firm that you're talking to. And also think about your scale. I mean, how much media do you need to drive? Because those two things, scale and current results, at least will help you get your arms around the firm you're considering.
But I worry that the big challenge, because I have this problem with my clients, and it's a good problem because it's what we work through and co-create a solution to, is, all right, I'm going to engage a PR firm. So they're going to get me placed here and here. They're going to get me on a radio show. They're going to get me in the Business Chronicle. I don't know that they, at least at first, they don't get the connect part of that, which is where the rubber really hits the road, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, no, I want to be careful here and make sure that I haven't said that public relations is supposed to actually close sales, because the sales team is supposed to close sales. But the PR firm should be getting you leads in the door, sure, so that sales can work them. And that is, I think, a frequent misconception about public relations. It should be working closely with your sales team so the messages are in alignment. But essentially, PR is on the outer edge of your marketing efforts, creating relationships. And one of the ways that companies can really focus on making that work well is to give their PR counsel very crisp instructions about who their target audience is. So don't bring me Bloomberg if it's not Bloomberg, where your audience is shopping for products and services that you provide. Make sure that they're really targeted on who you want. And a lot of times PR firms are pleasers, staffed by pleasers. Mm-hmm. They want to just bring media hits to you. And that can create a lot of churn, a lot of effort, and a lot of work without any result. So focus, even though the discipline is difficult, is what creates results.
We coach a lot of our clients how to use radio and podcasting to solve their prospecting problem. We don't say it solves your sales problem, because if your sales problem is broken and you bring on podcasting, your sales is just going to suck faster and be worse, you know.
So it's probably the same with this, right?
Well, I think that's what you're saying. Yeah. So I think that is a misconception. All right, I've engaged a firm, so I'm now going to be famous and I'm going to have leads coming out the door and I'm golden. But that's not how it works.
Well, you'll absolutely be famous in front of the target audience that you choose, and so choose wisely. And you know, there's market research firms and things like that can help companies focus, because, you know, the truth is companies are also in volatile, changing industries. A lot of times, you know, we look for, right to market actually looks for volatile, changing industries. So we work in e-commerce, we work in energy, oil and gas, and we work in healthcare. And those are our three main practice areas, because those industries are under such pressure, the message really matters and it needs to be told well.
So what's your favorite part of the job, the most rewarding part, and what do you find a little bit challenging, if not downright frustrating sometimes?
Oh, two different questions. Let me take the downright frustrating. Personally, time management. You know, you can only be with so many people at once. And media and the internet and so much of our work is online, kind of multiplexes time. And I feel like I personally don't do as good a job with time management as I would like to do. And I'm always trying to, you know, fix that. And that's a real personal struggle. And I can get so frustrated when a wonderful person that I really want to follow up with is not someone I follow up with in that day. If you guys know what I'm talking about, it's just so frustrating. And then as far as most rewarding, I would say the more my team works together, I find the professional development of my team to be fabulous. That is so much fun to see people learning and growing. I feel like we're on the leading edge of public relations. We're a very innovative company. You know, companies make their reputations on innovation, on value, or on service, typically one of those three. We're innovators in public relations. And when I see my team bring new ideas to the table and then we see those take off and create results, and it has nothing to do with what I suggested and I wasn't even involved, I love that. I love it.
How has the social web impacted your business? I mean, I suspect it's had good things and it's had bad things as a result. What's the difference between PR and social media?
Well, I think that the social web didn't impact the public relations business. It sort of is the public relations business. It's kind of like asking the question, how does oxygen impact the employee team? Well, it's there, and it's a really big factor. You know, how big a factor? Critical, absolutely critical. I think that media is a spectrum, and the spectrum starts with the individual, and it goes out to the mass media companies like the Bloombergs and the Time Warners and the Comcasts. So somewhere along that spectrum, each company has a unique recipe for their own success, which unfortunately or fortunately changes over time. So what's good for you this year isn't the same basket of media that's going to be good for you next year necessarily, if your audience grows and changes and has different expectations of you. So you know, it was the difference between PR and social media. There really is no difference. It's all on the spectrum of communications for your company about your reputation, managing it, and attracting the right audience to you.
Well, Yahoo used to be the cool website. It no longer is. So in 5 years, Facebook may not be the world changer that it is today. But I think if your focus is still on, all right, we got to figure out ways to connect, you're always going to be ready for that next evolution of technology, right?
Exactly. I think taking it up to a strategic level, and that's one of the reasons we put in this volatile time a methodology in place. We're like, okay, what will always matter? You know, third-party credibility, that's the awards part. What will always matter? Getting in front of people and creating awareness, whatever media, whether that's Facebook or whether that's, you know, Huffington Post or Smart Money. And then also access. It's always going to matter that people meet each other, that people who have solutions meet people who have needs. And so that we've tried to put a methodology in place that is going to be buoyant with changing technologies.
Are you in the camp of the people who don't like the phrase social media because it still portrays as one-way communication?
You know, I'm in the camp of people that likes to use the words that your audience understands.
Yeah.
So if I'm talking to people who like to use the word social media, I'll use it all the time. No, I'm serious. I really believe language matters, and not your language, your audience's language. So I guess, yeah.
I do the same thing. To savvy people like you, I say social web. But to people who I don't think understand, I say social media. But I hate social media. I think it's the wrong way to phrase it.
I think all media is social. 72% of people that read the newspaper read it online, forwarded through a friend, or by Facebook today, according to Nielsen. Now, that's going to be a different stat next year. But hello? I mean, so, even the New York Times, even the Wall Street Journal, is read mostly on Facebook in an email. So when you look at it like that, you realize that this is so interconnected, there is no wall there.
So when partnering with a PR firm, there's that initial burst to get things right, get things headed true north. But I'm operating under the impression that there's some degree of ongoing maintenance is not the right word, but you don't just get a PR firm for a couple of months and then drop them, right? There's this ongoing engagement with a PR firm if you're doing it right. Is that?
Well, if public relations is driving results for your business the way it can and should, especially in today's like technically wired media environment where people are always on their phone, interfacing with news media and reading articles, public relations in most businesses, again, we're a B2B, it should really be helping to drive and inform business decisions. So if it's doing that for your company, you know, first, it should be. If it's not doing that for your company, that's another issue. But most companies choose to continue to invest in what's working for them. So, yes, it's generally a long-term relationship. And, you know, part of the reason for that is also structural. When it comes to, you know, let's say we wanted to get this program at the American Marketing Association's annual meeting next summer, we'd be pitching that now. And then we'd also want to have a lot of media around that next summer. So just because of the timelines, moving around your PR focus with different consultants or different agencies tends to really hurt your results, just like as if you were investing in a fund and you kept buying and selling the same $200. Pretty much your changing transaction fees would eat up the value of your investment.
You may cringe at this question, but do you advise an organization? So a company has someone who says, all right, I'll just kind of handle some of this outreach. Do you think it's okay for someone in an organization to reach out to reporters who have a Twitter handle and start building relationships with them?
I think that's fabulous. I think one of the things that people fail to do is kind of own their own experience around public relations. Our commitment at Right to Market is that we're extremely transparent with our clients. I mean, they have all of the media lists. Kind of old style PR is we're keeping all the information and the secret sauce in the relationships. I think that information wants to be free, you know, to quote a fairly famous movie. So what you need to do in the best thing is if someone in your company is reading an article and they see the Twitter handle of that journalist, go ahead and reach out with a pitch and copy in or direct message also your PR firm and keep it going, keep the energy moving.
So you advise against, there's probably circumstances where it makes sense, but say, no, don't talk to me, talk to my spokesman. I mean, you want your organization out there, your client out there engaging with these people.
Well, we tend to work with industry leaders, fast growth companies between $5 and $50 million. So in that space, you know, there is not time for a lot of bureaucracy if you want highly effective communication strategies. I think that there is a lot of space for guidelines and kind of an understanding of protocols and how are we going to do this sort of thing. It's not a free-for-all, that's true, but to limit someone's access when they have a great story and they know the reporter they want to tell it to, doesn't that just seem silly? A common sense. That just doesn't work.
This lady is truly high velocity.
She is high velocity.
No question about that. So how can our listeners get in touch with you and learn more?
Well, I would love to have you guys see some of the things we're doing for other high velocity, fast growth companies at our website. There's a lot of video. There's our clients on MSNBC and CBS and CNN, and it's just always kind of fun. Also, our Twitter feed is fun. So you can follow us on Twitter at Right to Market. I'm going to spell that because it's a horrible company name, and it's soon going to be Valor PR. But WRITE, the number 2, MARKET. And that's our website and our Twitter. And I'd love to have any guests come. Also, for this week on May 12th, we have a seminar on how to create your own headlines from 2 to 4 p.m. It's going to be at Pardot headquarters in Buckhead. And if anybody wants to contact me through the website and they listen to the show, I'd be happy to have them come to that 2-hour seminar. It's heavy information, and they'll walk away with a strategic plan to create their own headlines.
Outstanding.
Well, if he hasn't done it already, Bernie Wolford, our COO, is supposed to sign one or two of us up for that because that's on our radar.
Looking forward to seeing you guys there. It's great.
Cool. Good show, man.
Yeah, that was a good show.
Did you learn anything this week?
I learned a few things today, yeah.
Yeah, fun stuff. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our high-velocity guest this morning, our producer, Brad Scolari, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.